And welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I almost lost that one. This is Phil Taylor, and Phil Conlon is here. How you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
And it's clear and cold, and no sight of the mayor, so everybody's happy. And we're going to be talking to Marcelin Duamungu. She is a member of the International Network of Women for Democracy and Peace, and she's going to tell us about the situation with Victoire Ingabire, who has just been sentenced to 15 years in Rwanda for daring to form a party, I guess, and for daring to talk about running for office. And we need to know about that. At halfway point, we're going to talk to Robin Philpott. Robin Philpott has a new book. I should say it's an updated book on our website, taylor-report.com. You can find Rwanda. I think he's also updated the title. Colonialism Dies Hard was the last time I went to that site. Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa couldn't be more timely. The New Scramble for Africa is dead on. Right now, in Central African Republic, there's been a really ugly episode going on where the French have landed troops. But we now have Marcelin Duamungu on the line. Are you there, Marcelin?
Yes, I'm there.
Thank you very much. I know it's late in Belgium, and we really appreciate your talking to us at this hour. You're a member of the International Network of Women for Democracy and Peace, and you are concerned, I know, about the case of Victoire Ingabire. Could you tell us? I mean, she's just been her appeal heard, is my understanding, and they have increased the sentence from, I think it was 10 to 15 years, I think now. This is a pretty terrible situation. Could you tell us, let's start with the question of, when did she return to Rwanda, and why did she go there? How did she get into this situation?
Okay, we can recall that Mrs. Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza was living for 16 years in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
And then she decided to go back in Rwanda because of lack of democracy there. And her party decided to send her there in order to try to bring about some change.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went back in January 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But then the president said later on that she would face a war of laws, and then she was arrested in April 2010.
Uh-huh. Now,
and then she was arrested in April 2010. An American lawyer, Peter Erinder, tried to go and defend her. He was also imprisoned in May 2010, but he was released thereafter and went back to America, and she was defended now by an English advocate, if I can say,
mm-hmm.
and a Rwandese lawyer. And from that moment, on October 2012, she was sentenced on 8 years by the High Court. She appealed against the sentence, and now she got 15 years
mm-hmm.
by the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, she was she's the leader or one of the leaders of a party called United Democratic Front. That party was not yet established, right? Was that her intention to form a party in Rwanda? Is that where the trouble began?
Yes, when she went back, the party was not accepted in Rwanda. And when she went back, her first work was to try to register her party. But when she arrived there, she encountered many difficulties in doing that, so could not present the candidacy of her party for the elections, the presidential elections of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So till now, her party is not registered.
Uh-huh. Now, she is not the only person who has been arrested within Rwanda for who were members of her party. Are there similar charges? Can you tell us about some of the other people who've been arrested?
Yes, many political opponents in Rwanda are in prison. I can cite one of them, Maître Ntaganda, who is of the Social Party, is in prison. There is another one who is called Deo Mushaidi. He is in prison also, and many others. And even from the FDU party of Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza, many people are in prison. I can cite, for example, Sylvain Sibomana, an interim secretary general, who was arrested at the opening of the hearing of the appeal in the Supreme Court and charged with attending an illegal meeting.
Mm-hmm.
He has another case of organizing an illegal meeting because he went in a region in the north, and he was arrested also because he was speaking on behalf of an unregistered party. Mm-hmm. There are other seven members of the party who are arrested in the north and charged with meeting with Sylvain, the Secretary General. And there are two other members of FDU party, the Treasurer, Flora Irakoze, she's a lady,
mm-hmm.
who is now underground because she was wanted because for a matter involving, because they are supposed to have involved themselves in a petition of higher education students to the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
Because of suspension of scholarships. So everything is good to put in prison there. Yeah.
Yes. Now, by the way, I've been reading accounts, and one of the places I go to is called victoire-ingabire.com for an account of her trial. And it's mentioned that some people were arrested because they had attended her trial. In other words, they went to
see what
kind of justice, and they ended up arrested. Is that right?
Yeah, it's true, because the government there doesn't want people to know what's going on, because the case of Victoire Ingabire is unique. She's a lady who went back. She said, "I don't need an army to come with me. I come peacefully." But then the government fears, I don't know for what, and they try to intimidate everybody to go for the trial. They don't want people to go there.
Mm-hmm. What has been the reaction? I remember that the government of Holland, Netherlands, expressed an interest in the trial and told the government of Rwanda they were going to observe this. There are various European human rights organizations who've spoken. Can you talk a little bit about the international interest in this case?
Surprisingly, in May this year, the European Union has taken up a resolution that was supposed to was asking the international community and the Rwandan government to handle the case of Ingabire Julie. But then they had decided, the European Union Parliament had decided to send some observers for the trial in the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But to date, we don't know if somebody went there anyway.
Uh-huh.
And it is surprising that such a resolution can't be followed by concrete action.
Yes.
And but I think that Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International and some people try to do something, but then I think the Kigali government is still very deaf. They don't listen, and mm-hmm. I don't know. But we can't rest and say we do nothing else, but we have to try.
Yes.
And do everything possible so that her case be understood. Mm-hmm. And I think that even on the day when the judgment was pronounced, the world was a bit busy with the Mandela death.
Mm-hmm.
On
the very day.
I think that.
Certainly, it would be a difficult. Everybody in the whole world was talking about Mandela. It's a very difficult time to get attention.
Everybody was talking about Mandela, and at the same time, Victor was sentenced to 15 years, and nobody talked about it.
I think, thanks to your efforts and many others, I know that there will be attention. We're speaking to Marceline Duamungu, pardon me, and of the International Network of Women for Democracy and Peace. And, of course, we're talking about Victoire Ingabire, imprisoned in Rwanda for attempting to form a party and run for office. I want to ask you about something I found bizarre or certainly troubling. She is an accountant and she's trained in business law. She has a career in Netherlands. A very impressive personality and a very intelligent woman. She clearly was making a political stand. Everybody understood that. Immediately upon her arrest, they shaved her head and put her into a pink uniform. Why is that? She is, after all, by the way, according to our system, presumed innocent, not presumed guilty, and her head has been shaved, and she's put in a prison garb. What's your opinion about that?
I think it is a part of intimidating people. Once you enter the prison, even if you are not convicted, they immediately shave you, and you put on a pink uniform. And that pink uniform is not offered by the prison. No. You have to buy it yourself. You buy it yourself. Yeah. And even confection and so on, tailoring is on your chart. Can you imagine that? Mm. And so it is part of the humiliating machine that when you enter, you no longer resemble others. So yes. You are shaved and you wear that pink uniform. Even the lawyer, Peter Erinder, had already been shaved, the American lawyer, mm-hmm. had already been shaved and has had already his pink uniform. And I think that he still wears it where he goes to give conferences and so on. He has kept it for a souvenir.
Yeah. It certainly shows a presumption about her. By the way, do you know her personally? Have you seen her?
Yes, I know her. Before I arrived in Belgium, I didn't know her. So I came to meet her before returning to Rwanda. She came in Belgium and she gave a conference. So I attended that conference, and that's why I knew her. And I found really that she was very courageous to go in such country where military who dictates everything. And she said, "I'm going back with no army," because people were asking, "What will you do without an army with you?" But she said, "I am a Rwandese woman. I'm going back there, and I want to work with people, and I don't need any army because I have shed too many blood. I don't no longer want any army to come with me."
Mm-hmm. She seems to have rallied people, Rwandans in the diaspora from all sort of many directions. I believe I know that. On this program, we spoke to Faustin Tugirimungu, a former prime minister under Kagame. who spoke of admiringly of her courage, and same with Mr. Teogen Rudasingwa, who used to be a mm-hmm. part of that government. There, yeah. She is becoming the rallying point, is she not?
Yes, I think so. I can say that in the Rwandese opposition, she makes unanimity. She is accepted by everybody because even men say we have not been enough courageous to go to do what she has done.
Mm-hmm.
Because many speak out, but they are outside of the country. She decided to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And say, if we have to change something in the country, we have to change it within. If we stay outside it, we will not change anything. And then she decided to go back. I think she is very, very courageous, and people do acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is Marceline Duwamungu, and she's with the International Network of Women for Democracy and Peace. I mentioned that there is the site, now I don't see it, Victoire Ingabire. Is there places we could suggest people go to get information on background for this case?
Yes, in fact, for example, we are not from her party. We are just a women organization
mm-hmm.
which struggles for women empowerment. So it is in this spirit that Victoire's case has always been very high on our agenda. We have even launched an international prize dedicated to her. It is awarded every year in March mm-hmm. on the occasion of the International Day for Women.
Mm-hmm.
So next year, in March, on 8th March, it will be the third time that we issue that prize. And that is the way that we have found that could help not forgetting that lady.
Mm-hmm.
So our website is it is in French and in English. So it is RIFDP, that is in French.
Uh-huh.
Réseau international des femmes pour la démocratie et la paix,
mm-hmm.
IWNDP.org. So International Women
good.
Network for Democracy and Peace.
Very good. And this other site that I found my note, it's victoire-ingabire.com. And so
I think that is the one from her party, her political party.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The one miracle of the internet, if people go to her name itself, they will mm-hmm. find many of these sites and messages. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Marceline Duwamungu. We were very glad we could have you on, and we're going to. We will check with you definitely in March to see who gets the award for doing work around
okay.
Victoria Gabiri's case.
Yeah, you are invited. If you can come up here in Belgium,
yeah.
We invite you really to come and join us.
Well, thank you.
We shall do maybe it in Canada because we have got also a section in Canada. And mm-hmm. Maybe next year, in 2015, it will be in Canada.
Well, wonderful, good. Well,
I'm
going to nominate Anne Garrison, by the way, for the award.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's done great work at KPFA.
You can still give your if you have got a candidate, you can still submit his name. And,
good.
We shall see. There is a jury which will decide who can get it next year.
Well, I thank you very much. We will, and as I say, we will follow up. Thank you again.
Bye okay, bye. I thank you too.
Okay,
bye, bye,
bye. Thank you. Stuck in my mouth today, Marceline Duwamungu, and we're sure glad to talk to her. And she's in Brussels, and she stayed up late for this. There is, you would know by now if you follow events in Africa at all, and particularly Rwanda, Burundi, these Congo, there are tens of thousands of people who have been removed and because of political struggles and armed struggles in the region, and that many of them are scattered to Holland and to Canada and France elsewhere. And what a remarkable woman, Victoire Ingabire, that she had the courage to do this. And this is the time of year to remember such people. I want to mention the Central African Republic. The French have sent troops. The UN Security Council, in its quotes, italics, wisdom, said that that they authorized use of force. That is, that the French could go in, and the rationale is, of course, that the French used to be the boss of the place. To me, they are getting this backwards. If you used to be the colonizing power, you should be the last one, not the first one. If, when the French say, oh, we're interested in Syria, we used to run Syria, you have to say, yeah, that is a problem. Go to the back of the line. You're not the first one to go in because you used to be the colonizing power. We cannot assume your good intention. Actually, we can assume your evil intention. Now, they're also in Mali, where the French say, well, we're here now, and we're sorting these people out. And they say, well, when are you going to leave? And they say, well, we're not sure. We're not actually talking about leaving. And they will do the same with the Central African Republic. Now, somebody, I want to thank them, sent me today a photograph, appears in the Guardian newspaper, of a French officer serving on the ground in the Central African Republic, and he's got a shoulder patch, a very interesting shoulder patch. It's SS on it, the German SS shoulder patch. Incidentally, I want to say something to the officers of the French army. He's out of uniform, and you could slap that guy silly. What the hell's he doing with a patch on his shoulder that doesn't belong to his uniform? Who's his commanding officer? Everybody's got to go. Anybody associated with that freak has to go. Not him. I understand he's a jerk. I mean every SOB who let him walk around with that on his uniform. SS, it says. So, France, you just lost your right to be there, as far as I'm concerned. This shows what a quagmire, an ideological political quagmire, is a so-called humanitarian intervention, which is just an excuse for Westerners to shoot up the place until they finally get somebody they like to run it. And it's also time for somebody to phone George Clooney. You know, George Clooney was operating spy planes out of South Sudan to spy on the government of Khartoum because he said they might be misbehaving. And so he's got a spy satellite, and he brags about it. Well, maybe he should use that spy satellite to spy on South Sudan out of where he's operating, because now you have a coup, counter coup. You have people being killed, and these are all friends of yours, George. You're the one who went in there and patted them all on the back, and you wanted them to be free and all that bunk. And now all you know to do is a more marine solution. And they don't want the damn Marines, I can tell you that. And George Clooney ought to bring all of his hardware home and go back to acting and stay out of politics. But you can tell he wants to be president, or he wants to be the governor of something or the senator of something. He certainly wants to look in a mirror all the time and have people see what a beautiful guy he is. But all this crummy stuff is going on with the Hollywood help. And Samantha Powers is, sitting on the president's desk and giving him great advice on who to bomb or who to attack. So that's the world we're living in right now. And in the Central African Republic, we're seeing it. Shortly we'll be talking to Robin Philpott. Another area, and Phil, you must know what this is, you'll be following it, that we ought to say something, and that is Ukraine, where McCain again, who helped out with Libya, we all saw, and we see the lovely results of the work of McCain and Lieberman, by the way, was there. Then he entered Syria illegally and supported and had his picture taken with terrorists and kidnappers. They've been identified kidnappers. He was there with them, smiling. And now he's decided to go and stand on a platform in Ukraine with the three leaders of the pro-Western, to simplify the stories, and pro-Western movements. And one of those three is on the no-go list, in a sense. He's a leader of a party called the Freedom Party. Of course, he calls it the Freedom Party. He's an anti-Semite. He says things in public. He's been told, once he was removed from the Ukrainian parliament for anti-Semitic speeches in the Ukrainian parliament, they said, no, you can't do that. So McCain is on the platform with him, and not just McCain, a liberal Democrat from Connecticut. Is his name Murphy?
His name is Murphy.
Yeah, good old Murphy. Well, Murphy's standing here.
He's Lieberman's replacement.
He's what?
Lieberman's replacement.
Yeah. What I assume is that they said, we're going to go over there. We can't take Lieberman, right? Yeah. Because this guy won't want to be seen with Lieberman. Because he's got a whole, frankly, neo-Nazi point of view. He's a very ugly customer. When he formed his party, he had the party symbol was a kind of stylized swastika. Now, he's one of the leaders. And there stood Murphy the liberal and McCain. Mm-hmm. Now let's give some credit here. The foreign minister of Germany, Mr. Westerwelle, he will not appear with them. He won't be on the same platform with that guy because, among other things, the guy is viciously anti-gay, and Mr. Westerwelle happens also to be gay. But also, I think he's carrying the foreign policy of Germany, which is no, we're not going down that road. But everybody better pay attention to what is going on there. And I notice now they're going to promote Klitschko, the heavyweight champion of the world. And I'm looking at Klitschko and I'm thinking, gosh, he looks like Max Schmeling. history just seems to run in circles where the heavyweight champion and this kind of ugliness goes on. Incidentally, Klitschko fights out of Berlin. He hasn't been fighting out of Moscow, or he didn't fight out of Kiev. No. He fought out of Germany. I watched his fights. I'm a boxing fan. His last three or four fights were in Germany, and his advisors. He has a staff of advisors who are from Merkel's party, and he doesn't pay for them. She pays for them. So wakey, 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 as they say in the British Navy.
Everybody,
open your eyes.
I was commenting that sometimes life imitates art. But there was a great German novelist, Leon Feuchtwanger, who quickly got out of Germany before the Nazis came to power because he kind of read the writing on the wall. He wrote a novel about Munich in the years leading up to the Nazis coming to power. And he parodies the Nazis in that novel, and he makes the character, the fictitious character who's the head of that movement, a boxer. And of course, when he published the book, everybody said, well, that's ridiculous. That's never going to happen. A clown like that's never going to take over, right? And now here you have, he published this novel in 1928, 29. Then he fled Germany because his life was threatened.
Yeah.
And here you have, 90 years later, life imitating art. There you go. You have a boxer who was standing up there with a Nazi, and getting praised in the New York Times, everybody else, because they're for freedom, right? They're for Western values.
Mr. Klitschko. Klitschko is just a sort of a smarter form of the other guy, in my opinion. But yes, it's always, by the way, boxing used to be the sport. I mean, it was, and Americans got to remind themselves, they do sometimes, that Joe Louis defeating Max Schmeling was the huge political moment. There's been documentaries made about it. There's novels written about that. All sorts of commentary remembering that in the great showdown that it was Lewis and Schmeling. And now we have Mr. Klitschko. By the way, the guy he didn't fight was Lennox Lewis. But Lennox Lewis did defeat his, Klitschko has a brother who's a pretender as a boxer too. He has another one of the titles. There are about three heavyweight titles, and the two brothers share them. Lennox Lewis, I think his last fight, he defeated the brother. I know for a fact he defeated him. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. This is the Taylor Report at CIUT 89.5 FM. We'll be back in just a moment, and we will be talking to Robin Philpott, who is reprinting his book on Rwanda.